Hi, this is Old Games Ru podcast number 14 and yours truly, Virgil
and the Mouse.
Do not be alarmed as today's program marks a linguistic departure from our usual routine, and likely our today's guest is to blame for that. So we'd like to introduce Scaryfan, whose knowledge in both video games and cinema is very comprehensive, which is going to be very handy now, as today we would like to discuss the exact relationships between the worlds of video game and film, how they perceive and affect each other, and how the process has changed through the years.
I'm glad to be here with you guys, fellow lovers of old video games, and I hope to enlighten your audience with some of our discussion.
Right, so actually we kind of touched that theme in our previous programs when we discussed non-linear narrative, non-linear gameplay, and of course the topic of comparison of movies and video games kind of chimed in, but today we would like to discuss a somewhat different topic. So if we try to compare video games with movies, there is actually a huge gap between them, between the appearance of both art forms, about 80 years, which separates the start of beginning of motion pictures as we know them at the very end of the 19th century and that of video games in 1970s. Of course, we want to try to discuss a space war that was played on some huge mainframe in the States, and just like we want to discuss some earlier experiments with trying to capture someone on primitive camera. So around 80 years separates both mediums, and well, maybe we would try to trace similarities in how both genres evolved. So at the time the film was already a major art form, I mean in the 70s, with a huge industry surrounding it, while games were still in infancy, with such pioneering titles as Pong, Asteroids, Knight Driver, and so on. They just appeared on the market. Anyway, Scaryfan, what was the time when this arcade, how do you call it, clubs or arcades, started to appear throughout the cities and become somewhat popular?
I think it was around late 70s and early 80s. I remember first going to an arcade around that time when I was in high school at the time.
I see. So first I think they had these mechanical machines, right? And then they moved to electronical ones. Is it so or I am mistaken?
Yeah, there were some old type mechanical type machines, yes. Then the first computer games that were in the arcades, like you mentioned, Pong and, you know, Asteroids, the Space Invaders.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know, became popular, and more people started to attend these arcades, and I think when Pac-Man came around and, you know, the Mario Brothers, that's when, you know, it really became very popular.
So it became kind of subculture thing?
Sure, yes. You know, at the time there was no other entertainment besides movies and TV, yeah, and books obviously, but, you know, it was very popular with kids. Going to video arcades, there was no home computers at the time, so, you know, people visited them to, you know, to play games on, and it grew from there.
So we dropped some huge bucks on these coins to just play a game for how many minutes? What was the usual play time? 5 minutes, 3 minutes, even less?
Yeah, per quarter, yes. Depending, you know, how well you did. But games at the time, you know, were very difficult compared to nowadays, right? They were meant to be played on screen, and you would attempt to beat the high score each time, right?
So, well, nowadays the situation is different because the games have also, as movies, have enormous budgets. GTA 5 had a budget of $450 million. Of course, the majority of his budget actually went for various ways of advertisement. Well, it happens because nowadays there is a much wider audience of video games. That's why one of the reasons why they became more simpler, so they can offer entertainment for everyone without much problems to get enough skill to just play the game. Actually, I decided to discuss this topic because several years ago, a screenwriter for one of the Call of Duty Modern Warfare games, I don't recall now which one exactly it was, but he received a prestigious prize for his work on the game, I mean for a screenplay he wrote. Well, let's admit the fact that it was only given to the members of the Screenwriters Guild, but I think nevertheless it's just milestone achievement for video game industry. So also in some countries like Great Britain, video games are outselling the music, DVDs and movie tickets. Actually, I found this article on The Guardian, which says in 2009 became a country's most valuable purchased entertainment market, which were bigger than DVDs or music sales combined, and more than four times cinema box office taking. So video games over the years became a force to be reckoned with.
Maybe we will start with beginning with the early 80s. It is very interesting to understand how it started in the United States and in Europe, because we don't know it. So the question is, was it like really a competition between video games industry and film industry in that time? Or was it like film industry didn't notice the games at all?
At the time, due to the games being very simple, obviously they only had, you know, pixel type graphics, there wasn't really that much competition with movies themselves, because movies, you know, were such more profitable as far as money making.
Yes, but game industry was very fast growing.
Yes.
So until this collapse in the 1893, there were quite a lot of companies of arcade machines, of consoles and so on. And some movies tried to address this new phenomenon.
Yes, at the time, obviously as video game culture grew, movies would put those scenes, you know, especially if they involve teenagers or kids in the movie, you know, sometimes they would go to arcades and play games, and it just became a way of, you know, showing the culture of the kids at the time. I've noticed, like, in recent years, obviously there's not as much showing of video games in movies, because they've, like Virgil said, it has grown, you know, beyond movies. It's a much more popular industry now than movies are. So I think movie studios don't want to promote video games anymore, since they're a competition for them, right?
So you think there's a direct competition between those two?
Yes, obviously.
So it is only now, not back in the 80s?
I think in the 80s, yeah, it was less, obviously, but, you know, now there's such a big industry. People only have a certain amount of money to spend on entertainment, and, you know, if they buy it,
they'd water their wallets.
Yeah, so if they're spending $60 for a game, they're not gonna be able to see so many different movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've read that people think that video games are more cost-effective way of getting entertainment, because, you know, they can play it over and over, the game, whereas mm-hmm. a movie, you see it once, and, you know, rarely do you see them more than once.
But, you know, in the recent years, I mean, the last 10 years, I think the games started to become more streamlined form of entertainment. And today I think we should discuss it. But anyway, let's start from the start. So, in your opinion, how the depiction and attitude to video games in cinema changed throughout the years? How the directors and writers portrayed video game culture then and now?
At first, I noticed that in the very early days of video games, where you only had Pong-type games, they did appear in a few movies, science fiction-type movies, and basically they tried to use them as a futuristic-type device, because, you know, people didn't have knowledge of playing games at the time.
Like a high-tech pinball machine or something like that.
Yes. There's an early movie called Soylent Green. It used, you know, a video game basically showing, you know, in the far future, yet they're only showing a video game with very primitive technology, which was sort of, you know, a conundrum. And then you have movies like Star Wars, where they showed an animated chess type game with holographic pieces, which I think later they used that in a video game, animated chess type game, right?
Yes, there was a game
yes.
like that. Called Aircon, I believe.
Oh, yeah, okay. Throughout the 80s, as, you know, video games became mm-hmm. more popular, they would show, you know, arcade scenes in games. And I think at the time, they were, you know, used as a way of showing people having fun, compared to, you know, somebody playing a console game you know, right now, it's not a cinematic way of showing somebody having fun, right? You're sitting on a couch, you know, with a controller. It's not something people would want to see in a movie. Whereas, you know, an arcade, you have flashing lights and sounds, and I think that's why one of the reasons.
Like a club or something.
Yes.
For special needs people.
So it was something more cinematic to show in the movie. Yeah. That's why I think one of the reasons they don't show them anymore, console tape games.
Yes, well, first, I agree with you on Solid Green. I actually seen that movie, and yes, I remember they had this arcade cabinet back then, and it was some very primitive game.
Yes.
I was surprised to find out that this was one of the first appearances of video games in cinema. The movie, in fact, came out in 1974, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, around that time.
But there was a film which is much more important to our today's issue, because the producer of this film, he was fascinated at the time with emerging video games and as well as computer graphic effects, and he thought he could make it available and known to a broader audience by making a movie on the topic. And this movie is Tron,
yes.
In fact, shown by Disney. As I've read, that many of the film companies he approached outright denied him, because he thought it was just ridiculous. But Disney agreed, and this movie became a hit. Basically, I don't need to explain what this movie is about. It's about some guy who's designing video games in real life. When he gets sucked in virtual space, and they have very particular way of showing this virtual space, very artistic, to the point that the film was shot in black and white, and these video game sequences, they were hand-colored them by a different company to make these special effects, and it also has some computer-generated graphics in the form of Tron bikes. They had some kind of bike race in the film. It was one of the first examples of the movies where video games were taken seriously by the makers of this film, without dumbing it down to just, you know, look at these nerds playing some stupid electronic games. What do you think about that?
For sure, yeah, it was a very revolutionary film at the time. Now you've seen it where, you know, there's video game characters in a world, like, you know, Wreck-It Ralph recently,
mm-hmm.
or Spy Kids 3D, where kids enter a video game universe. And but at the time, Tron was one of the very first, and for a long time after, there weren't any other produced.
Yeah, but there was a large gap between Tron and Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes.
No serious movies between. Why it was so?
You mean that there were no movies that portrayed video game world as a central topic
that
of the film?
You enter the video game world inside.
I'm not sure about that
computer.
Because there was a different film which was about virtual reality called Lawnmower.
But it's not about games.
Well, it's about virtual reality, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Not exactly a video game, but a virtual world. And what exactly are video games if they're not just a, you know, same virtual reality world? Just depends on your point of view. How do you view them? But actually, I can remember several movies that talk about it. Some quite cheaply produced, I mean, B-style movies. After the success of Mortal Kombat, the film. I mean, as a video only. I don't remember the name, but yes, it was something about it. There was also Jackie Chan film, where he got his head stuck in an arcade machine, gets electrocuted, and then he thinks he's in Street Fighter game.
Yes, yes.
Dressed as different characters, but it's just a minor example.
Yes, they've also used video games as something where somebody becomes trapped inside, like you mentioned. There have been more horror-type movies, like Brain Scan in 1994. Basically, you know, somebody is trapped with an evil character inside a game, and, you know, they're risking life and death with it. Also, Freddy's Dead in 1991, one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. There's a scene where a kid becomes trapped in a nightmare, and he's a video game character, and Freddy has actually a power glove on, one of the old Nintendo power gloves,
mm-hmm.
in place of his, you know, claws.
Yes, I vaguely remember that scene.
Using it in horror-type circumstances has been done by several movies.
Well, yes, the theme of isolation, of being caught in alien environments. Well, I think that we should move to the second question I'd like to discuss today, and that is, what was the first time you heard the term cinematic used for advertisement in video game? Is there actually a game that could be really called that way? Cinematic game, cinematic gameplay?
The first time I've heard of it was Dragon's Lair, I think, 1983. That was a revolutionary game, which used a laser disc in the video arcade. And basically, it's an interactive movie where you choose the direction you want the animation to move, whether it's left, right, up, down, or perform some action, right? And basically, it was had the quality of a modern animated movie at the time. It was done by Don Bluth, and who had done Disney films in the past. And, you know, home computers at the time couldn't produce animation of studio quality, of a movie type quality, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first time I remember seeing, you know, something sort of similar to a movie being played as a game.
You mentioned this first Laserdisc type games, but you know, even from gameplay perspective, they were very primitive, even much more primitive than the other games that were available at the time. Being it's, I don't know, even more primitive than Pong or something like that, because only thing you could do is just press the right button at the right time. It was very limited. If you press the wrong button, you would see a scene of most likely your animated demise of your character. But as I realized, these games were very popular, right? Because even today we see them being remastered, and it has so many different re-editions. It just puzzles me why would people want to see exactly the same thing on the screen after all these 30 years. But then there are games that could offer you much more.
Yeah, later on it developed, I think, Alone in the Dark, those types of games where it had cinematic mm-hmm. angles of scenes, which led to Resident Evil after that. That's sort of started to look like you were playing within the movie, and you had 3D characters which you could move around, but again with a fixed angle of the camera. I think later on it developed again where you had interactive cutscenes like in Half-Life, where you played and you reach a certain point in the game and something would happen where you could see characters talking to you and affect the action somehow.
Well, strictly speaking, Half-Life didn't have any cutscenes because, you know, cutscenes is where you can't act. You're just being shown how the environment around you evolves or something like that.
Yes, they were in-game cutscenes. Like, it used the certain characters you would meet and they would start speaking to you. So it's like an in-game cutscene is what mm-hmm. I mean.
Well, actually, if we talk about cutscenes, I would like to remember a game called Karateka from 1984, because it is considered, at least by Wikipedia, to be one of the first games which used cutscenes. It was basically one of the first fighting games as well, and between fighting different characters, between advancing from one screen to another, player was shown how the plot advances. In a very primitive way, but yet, it was the first. And this guy later, he designed also several games called Prince of Persia. Well, also I'd like to remember an interesting game. It's called Amazon by renowned author Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton, who is the author of Jurassic Park and many other movies, who was brought to the screen. So basically he's also made one game, very early adventure game, designed as an interactive fiction with graphics. It may be interesting from that standpoint that he's such a prime-time Hollywood screenwriter, you know, and goes down to designing a video game, and there were only three people involved in design, one who made the graphics, and he and another guy who did the programming. It also brings us to a different question, as how the directors, how they perceive game designers, and how do they approach the video game design thing. So, Dimas, I think you had something on the topic.
I was interested in this topic and found that indeed some of well-known directors used to design games or at least make scripts for the video games, like Steven Spielberg, who did a script for The Deep, which was not used in the final game, but some ideas, some things he created.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the guys who created the film Matrix, maybe Scary Fun knows more about this.
Well, I understand what you're trying to say. It's Wachowski brothers, they also made a game or participated in creation of a game based game, I think was called Enter the Matrix. Yes.
Yeah, and actually I didn't play it, but I read about how it was accepted, and it was not a big success. People think this is a bit mediocre and a bit dull. Okay, but some of the directors used to approach this video games market, and even big companies like Disney, like Lucasfilm, had their video game branches.
Mm-hmm.
They were very successful at the 90s.
Yes, the LucasArts did bring this Star Wars to the computer market.
Yeah, and adventures, not even connected to the franchises from the movies.
Well, there's one game actually I'd like to remember. It's a lesser known game. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called Agent Wolf. It's a game from, I think, 1990. It came from a company called Dynamics. Dynamics was a branch of Sierra. And this game had both digitized actors and real-time cutscenes using the game engine. The game had a 3D engine. Basically, there were several episodes this game in which you could participate as a player. Car chase, plane chase, or something like that. So basically, it was a very early attempt to build an interactive movie by actually letting player to participate in some of the stages. Unlike the later interactive movies, where basically all your interaction with the game was limited to just pressing the button at the right time to get a good result.
There is an interesting topic connected with this. When did actually real actors appear in the games? I don't know. Maybe our expert can answer this.
Well, you mean like full motion video scenes, like the Tex Murphy games?
Yeah, but this was around mid-90s, but probably there was something earlier. I heard about some adventure which was even banned in some countries.
Oh, you probably mean Night Trap?
Yeah.
That was, had controversial scenes. Some government agents in the US tried to have it banned. Basically, I think it was overblown, the controversy, because what they claimed the game contained about, you know, sex and murder and all that, there wasn't really, just hysteria.
Yeah, well, just what do you expect from a Sega game, anyway? Yes, interesting that the Sega CD, one of the early consoles of the 90s, also had a big amount of those FMV games. Most of the games were pretty bad, as far as I can tell, but it kind of started this trend of introducing Hollywood actors to the world of video games. But, you know, actors, it's just like a job to them. Some value their reputation more than the others, so some are willing to try. Some new thing, well, some are more conservative. So I don't understand, actually, Dimas, I don't understand your question. Why are you interested in...
I was interested in when real actors appeared in the games.
Well, I think Scarefun has answered your question pretty much.
Yeah, basically when the CD-ROM device became popular, they had to have some content to fill, you know, such a large content.
And also a big budget enough to secure these actors.
Yes. So I think those type of movies which had, you know, full video of scenes was one way to get people interested in CD-ROM. And later the game Myst popularized people purchasing it a lot. And that was with computer animation.
So yes, all these actors were brought to the production because people just thought that it would sell well.
Right.
Just like anything, I'm not sure if you know it or not, but I heard that when in the early 70s, just after the sexual revolution, some of the censorship laws in Europe were relaxed, so people could portray a lot of things. Actually, if they rated their movie accordingly, or I think in some countries you had to show your movie in a particular theaters, but you could show almost anything. And basically, some of the countries, nearly whole countries, have taken another path, like Germany, that just started with sex comedies. And you know, now when you say German movie, everyone thinks that you mentioned porn. So basically, I think the situation in the mid-90s were pretty much like people just thought that, well, it's easier way to make money. So kind of marrying both video games and cinema, just the more direct way you can think it's possible. And as far as I know, it was both expensive and not very profitable. So that's why in around 97, 98, people just stopped investing money in these kind of games.
Yes, yeah. They had consoles which used CD-ROMs exclusively, like the 3DO, which, like you said, used these types of games. And they went bankrupt because the gameplay wasn't there. It was just, you know, an interactive movie.
Well, I'd like to move to a different question, which actually takes what both of these genres have taken from another. Do you think that introducing elements from other art categories like cinematic or fixed camera angles, cutscenes, especially pre-rendered ones, different from the actual gameplay in older games, mostly evident in older games because the graphic quality wasn't as good as cutscenes. If you recall games like Final Fantasy, they became very famous because they had all 4 discs packed cutscenes, great looking cutscenes, also compulsive plotline, even in smallish kind of flash games that can play on the web, getting released like every week or so. Are all these things really necessary for further development and acceptance of video games as a medium? Our gameplay ideas are not enough?
Whether you consider them art, which obviously they are, using these types of cinematic devices within games, it's something that people are familiar with in telling a story. Like, you have a limited way of showing that in video games, so having, you know, clips of people talking or expounding upon the story to make it move along between where you're actually playing some type of game. It's not necessary, but I think it helps create a story, right?
But you know, today we came to the point where almost all the games that are getting released, I'm not sure about sport ones, have some sort of cutscene or all these cinematic tricks. The gameplay and just these cutscenes don't always align together very well, because there was a game called Tomb Raider, a recent one, basically showcased Lara Croft as just a newbie, not a great archaeologist. She just started in this game, she was just a student, and basically she starts with getting shipwrecked, and the game shows how she struggles to survive in this new environment, some sort of island. She can't find any of her buddies, but as game progresses, you know, she starts to be a tough girl. She starts to, you know, blasting heads of some mercenaries, ripping them apart with, you know, this pick or whatever she had. And you know, this cutscene still shown her presenting in a way like she's a vulnerable woman, and her friends really worried about her because she's still being a novice in all this business. But you know, the gameplay shows you a totally different thing, like she blows up villages, burns down some cities to the ground, you know, stuff like that. And it just gets to so ridiculous that cutscenes go almost in counterpoint to the actual gameplay.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make some sort of interactive environment, sort of like virtual reality, right? I think the graphics are becoming much more real-like. So they want people to experience like they're in control of a character in a world, you know, they can do anything in it. I think they're leading to virtual reality. As graphics become better and better, I think people will find themselves playing games where they're actually inside the game, moving around themselves, whether it's with the Oculus Rift headset on, right? Obviously, it was bought out by Facebook recently, and so they believe it has a very good future and a way of getting people into an online world.
Yes, well, I remember several games that were called Fahrenheit, and another called Heavy Rain. Basically, the first one is somewhat interactive movie, but not in the way of using real-life actors, but it just has quick time events, where basically an interactive cutscene, as you mentioned earlier, a way to, you know, make games more interactive. Because where a person doesn't play these games, he's kind of becomes a bit of dissociated from this game. And these quick time events were basically designed to prevent it. So you're involved all the time. But with Heavy Rain, actually, it kind of became ridiculous, because this game is just, you know, a huge animated interactive movie, and some scenes, opening scenes, just totally ridiculous, because there was this guy, protagonist, and you had to help him to arrange dinner plates on the table. If you press wrong button, he's gonna drop or break them. So I'm not sure if it's what all the industry is coming to or not, because today we only see examples of a fresh game, either they're coming from indie companies, because I'd like to remember a game called Reckless Disregard for Gravity, which is a base jumping simulator. So basically you just jump down from some point and try to score as much points as you can, just like in these Tony Hawk's games and etc. But in this game, obviously, you're falling down, you're therefore not. You need to touch the buildings by flying very close to them and so on. But this game, I just want to use it as an example of something original, because most of the games, even those indies, if you take a look at Steam today, you see that there are so many games, so many companies offer these, you know, very simplistic platform games where you just have to run from one corner of the screen to another while avoiding falling to death by jumping onto the spikes or something like this. It's just amazing that this kind of endless flow of these games today, even indie developers don't want to actually introduce any new ideas, and of course you can't expect the major AAA ones like Ubisoft or Electronic Arts to introduce anything new. So that's why I actually was interested in this question, if all these tricks that came from cinema world are really necessary today for the acceptance of video games. Maybe it's because these days video games have so much more wider audience who are not ready to dive in, you know, hardcore gameplay. Maybe that was the reason why in the mid-90s this casual market of games become such a prominent thing. Always combined free or, you know, hidden object games become popular because they're just very diluted games.
Yeah, casual games, you know, they provide an experience to a person for, you know, a limited amount of time, and it provides enjoyment and it's fun to play. And investing hours and hours of time to play one of the modern Call of Duty games or things like that, it takes a lot of effort, and, you know, some people can't or won't play for that amount of time, or they don't have the technique to play that.
Yeah, they just gonna play these Facebook games, their workplace, the office, right?
Yes.
Let's move on to the next question. What are the techniques typically seen in video games? For example, non-linear gameplay with several ways to advance story and cinema. For example, an open-ended final that leaves it to the viewer to speculate on the meaning of the whole picture. That might work in the hour, but aren't used or used not often enough.
One thing I thought of was different type scenes with different endings. One movie I thought of was Run Lola Run. You've seen that. Basically, a girl goes through a story three different times, and the first two times she dies. She has to progress again and again until she gets the correct ending. I thought that was a really fun movie. But it's not done very often in cinema compared to, you know, video games. One other thing I thought of was the slow motion shooting used in The Matrix, and at the time also came out a game called Max Payne, which used the same bullet time slow motion, right? But again, cinema was using slow motion bullet fights way earlier in the 70s. Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch, he was the one that originated that style.
John Woo made it popular in the late 80s again.
Yes, John Woo also, yeah. But again, the main idea from video games that are used in movies are motion capture, CGI effects. Yeah. The big budget movies that are coming out right now are computer animated movies, whether they're, you know, animation like Disney and Pixar, or, you know, special effect type movies, the comic book movies.
Like the recent Guardian of the Galaxy.
Yes, yeah, they all use massive amounts of computer-generated effects. You know, basically, movies like Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, that was a completely CGI animation movie.
One of the first, if not the first. I mean, as it posed itself as a movie, not as a, you know, like Pixar, that advertises just like cartoons.
Yeah, not very many serious type science fiction movies are done. I think the ones that have been tried in the past, they haven't been very successful. People seem to like more comedy type animation for kids.
Alright, I see. So, do you think that cinema can adopt anything else from a video game world, or just it just won't work? Because a lot of things that happens in video games, they have to do with choice that is player presented with, and it's just difficult to show it on the big screen unless you have some picture-in-picture or something like that.
I think what it's leading up to is virtual reality, where you're actually inside a computer-generated environment and following some sort of story. But I think first they have to develop character artificial intelligence enough so that if you're interacting with somebody in a story, they have to be able to react in a real-life manner, right? And I think the technology today is not there yet, but it's progressing along, right?
Well, you know, I remember one more movie, the video game subject, certain science fiction film from 1999, film that is other than The Matrix, and also it is not a 13th floor. The movie, in fact, is called Existence, was directed by David Cronenberg, and it's taking a virtual reality concept to a new direction, where the game world resembles adventure arcade games. Basically, it's a movie that tells us about a video game device, some kind of, I don't know, console or whatever it is, which connects directly to the human body. For example, in this movie, where characters are in the game world, we go to certain restaurant, also showing video games and interesting lights. Jude Law, while eating, he makes a gun out of the bones from the dish that he had ordered. I don't recall what it was, chicken or not. Basically, he builds a gun, and when he loads it with his own teeth and shoots the waiter, because it was just, you know, part of the game screenplay.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, there are other movies that use virtual reality, like Strange Days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was directed by Catherine Bigelow. She was James Cameron's wife at the time. Also, I think Johnny Mnemonic, yeah, with Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
That was a cyberpunk story.
Yes, I read it.
Where he's able to load programs into his brain directly and move information around. Another one I found interesting was Surrogates with Bruce Willis. The whole society has transformed, where everybody's hooked into basically computer environment and playing with avatars of themselves.
Yeah, I recall that film as well. They're all the robots, right?
Yes, yeah. They're all basically avatar-type characters walking around.
Just not as blue.
Not as blue, right. I think WALL-E also used that, Pixar's WALL-E. When the robot finally encounters humans, they're big, fat, and lazy, and hooked up into virtual reality machines also. I think that's one of the fears that movies show, people becoming too addicted to virtual reality. That'll take over humanity's life, and people won't be living their ordinary lives anymore.
Yes, I see. Well, you know, it's actually a very common topic in the movies, I think, the fear of technology, to avoid technology, you know, kind of ludism.
One other topic that came to mind was the use of games as a training to perform battles and warfare. The early film, The Last Starfighter, 1984, was one that used basically an arcade machine that was planted by alien culture, and it was a way to measure a person's ability to engage in warfare. And one guy who beat the game was beamed up to their spaceship and took part in intergalactic war. And recently there was also Ender's Game. It was a recent movie that also used that. They had a school of teenage kids who were deigned to be the best at playing games and, you know, their reflexes. And basically it was a training to perform in a real war, which they didn't know was actually happening.
Where are the video games shown in a good light or bad light in this film?
Were they shown in a good light or bad light?
Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, a lot of these cheapskate politicians like to employ this tactic by just telling, you know, the video games are just murder simulators or something like that. It can damage people with unstable psyches.
Yes, yeah. I think in those particular movies, there were different viewpoints that were presented. It could be very dangerous if somebody uses them for, you know, training real-life soldiers. But in actuality, I mean, they do, because governments use video game simulators to train their fighters, right? Like America's Army or
yes,
games of that sort.
I actually recall that there was a special version of Armored Assault game, the first-person shooter, which was sold to some governments, I think to American government, as a training asset.
Yes. But then again, you know, it does improve a person's reflexes and perception of connecting different facts in whether it be on the internet or anywhere in computerscape, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages to people playing games. But like you said, media and government tends to concentrate on the bad.
Well, scandalous stories sells better than something else. So, well, the last question then, most anticipated question, actually about movies which are based on video games. Do you think they all suck equally?
Well, there haven't been very many successful movies based on video games. I think the most popular one has been Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
That was so many years ago already. I think people would prefer to play the game rather than to view a movie based on the video game characters. Most of the projects that end up being adapted don't have a good screenplay, so they don't really translate well.
So yes, they actually have the exact problem as, you know, video game developers, how to adopt this or that feature from the movies to the computer program. And screenwriters and directors of the film have exactly the same problem of how to adapt a certain, you know, gameplay mechanic, how to show it in a film, so, you know, audience will be interested in seeing this without being ridiculous. Like, you know, there have been, several early films like Mario Brothers, Street Fighter, which actually tried to camp approach. At least I think it was camp approach. Maybe they just sucked so bad, you know, it was just beyond any redemption.
Right.
But it's not like the serious approach helped them as well, you know, because of Uwe Boll, right, or whatever, how his name's pronounced.
Yes.
And he tried to shoot some serious films like Alone in the Dark and Dungeon Siege, both based on, oh, Blood Rain as well. All these based on certain video games. You know, I think they all bombed box office. Well, at least they were not popular with critics.
I think recently they've tried to make more big-budget type movies, but they're having problems with how much money to invest in them. You've probably heard that they were adapting Halo as a movie.
It's been some time, yes?
Right. They ended up canceling it because it was too high a budget, and they didn't think there would be a big enough audience.
Easier to make a game, another sequel.
Yes, yeah. Although, right now they are making the World of Warcraft movie, which is very expensive, so...
Oh my god, it's just... why?
Yeah, we'll see how it does.
Well, do you think there's actually need to, you know, bring these games to the screen now, today? Because, you know, you can basically create everything you want now, and it will be quite realistic, and I think you won't need as big budget to just, you know, draw it on the screen. With games like Crysis, which I think set this... graphics level very high.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask the movie producers. They want to bring in kids especially to go and watch movies, and obviously since our video games are very popular with kids, that's a way to bring them into the theater. But like you said, I mean, there haven't been any really popular ones, adaptations recently. So it's sort of a dilemma for them. I mean, how many comic book movies can they make before, you know, people get sick of them?
Well, I think they already reached that level.
Yes. They're trying to compete with the video game market, and looks like they'll keep doing it until they get some success.
Is it really that games and the film industry is very separated? Or not
as separated as they were 30 years ago. Today, do you see them merging anytime soon?
Well, Steven Spielberg has said that, you know, virtual reality type movies are the future of cinema. So obviously it has to be made by computer generated images. So that's sort of the convergence we're heading to right now. But it's still some years away.
I think so.
Yeah, but only one Steven Spielberg is not enough. Other companies and critics have a lot of prejudice about video games.
Well, he got his pal George Lucas to help him with this one.
As far as, you know, video games becoming art, well, they are art. I mean, they have wonderful visuals, which is the same as movies are accomplishing, presenting a beautiful, you know, interaction of a world. And conveying emotion, I think, is what some people find lacking in video games. But there's recent games like The Walking Dead which were highly praised for making people feel sad about the characters and having them die, things like that. I think that's something that is improving in games in general.
Okay, I see. Well, I think this concludes our today's discussion. I hope everybody had a good time.
Yeah.
Yes, very interesting discussion indeed.
So we would like to thank Scaryphon for participating, for his unique take on our today's topic.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. And you've been listening to oldgames.ru podcast number 15 with Virgil
and the Mouse.
Have fun and stay tuned for more. Bye.